Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Look who's back. It's been a few days since we've spoken to this guy, the Professor John Clayton, with us. Hello, John.
Hello. It's been crazy. I mean, it has been absolutely crazy. Sorry for missing everybody, but I know trying to come back last night was a nightmare from Chicago and Canton. I know that we had the 11-hour meeting on Wednesday. It went 11 hours. So I got to spend 11 hours with Bill Belichick.
Well, that sounds like an electric time right
there.
It
actually was. I mean, he was the best person in the room. There was no question. I mean, we had Ron Wolf, Bill Polian. I sat next to, Gil Brandt. Sal Powell was there. I mean, we had all these great people. But the best person speaking on the subjects of football was Bill Belichick. I mean, he was on his game.
Well, there's no debating his knowledge, that's for sure. Yeah. Hey,
By the way, he shook my hand. I checked in the same time on Tuesday night. And so, I said hi to him, and of course, he was intent on, getting checked in, so he didn't say anything back. And so then we both walked to the elevator at the same time, and I was kind of wondering, it's like, okay, should I just step back and just let him ride up the elevator and me not, give him his space? And so the elevator opened up. He says, hey, John, aren't you coming in? It's like, yeah, okay, great. So get upstairs, talk a little bit, and just head to the rooms, and that was it.
That's nice. It's a good interaction.
Yeah.
Hey, I think I heard correctly. Were you mocking Jim on your show today? Did I hear you imitating his voice? About a point spread that he was going to try to sell you on?
I mean, he's going to bring up the idea. It's like because, Mr. Underdog is going to bring up the idea that Tennessee is 10-point underdogs to the Houston Texans, a team that they beat in Week 6 by 7 points. And so I was saying, okay, I'm sure Jim's going to ask. And it's like, do you take that one? And I go, absolutely.
So the Texans are at Kansas City, right? And they're 10-point underdogs.
That's correct.
And the Titans, 10-point underdogs at Baltimore?
No, forget the Titans. I'm talking about the Texans. Yeah, the Houston Texans in Kansas City.
Okay.
Because they're both 10-point underdogs. And, I think you take Baltimore even giving the 10.
No,
there.
John. No, the 10-point underdog that has the best chance this weekend is Tennessee, not Houston. And I'll tell you why, because the Texans' defense is terrible.
Uh-huh.
It's worse than the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Not saying the Seahawks are terrible, but they're below average. And the Texans just aren't going to get it done at Kansas City. But Tennessee, with Derrick Henry, has a chance against Baltimore.
But what you're saying, we're not talking about, I mean, both Baltimore and Kansas City are going to win, okay? But it's going to be closer. I mean, 10 points is a lot of points to give against Deshaun Watson and his ability to come back. That's a lot.
John, you look at this Seahawk offensive line, they're banged up. Yupati's banged up. Dwayne Brown looks like a game-time decision. Do you think they can get it done without those two and the fourth and fifth string running back in the backfield?
Not without George Fant, because now we find out that George Fant is questionable in a game-time decision because I guess he suffered a groin injury in practice. And so now if he can't go, they're really in trouble because who's going to play? Are you going to put Jamarco Jones back at left tackle? That didn't work out. He was much better at guard, and now they need him at guard. And so who's going to play the tackle position if Fant can't?
It's a good question.
Chad Wheeler, John.
Yeah, I mean, a guy that just signed this week. Mm-hmm. I know he's no. I mean, he has to be Marshawn Lynch to be able to come back that fast.
Well, and that all of this will impact what we see out of Lynch, right? I mean, if these guys can't run block, and I was saying earlier, John, that some level of comfort as a Seahawk fan is that we've seen everything fall on Russell's shoulders before. The season where Mike Davis led this team in rushing from the running back position with just 250 yards and no offensive line to speak of, and Russell led the league in touchdown passes that year. He's shown us. I mean, you could argue he won he carried the team last week. They had no running game. So it's not the best situation by any stretch, but if anybody can pull it off, it's Russell Wilson, and not because I'm a fan, but because we've seen him do it time and time again.
Well, and that's what I think the interesting juncture is as far as this matchup against Aaron Rodgers, because, and I don't know if any of you guys agree, but this is a stage right now where Aaron Rodgers has been either number one or number two at quarterback for 8-9 years. He's been up there with Tom Brady. And, I mean, he's slipping a little bit. Some of that's the competition. But if Russell Wilson beats Aaron Rodgers, you can now make the argument he's passing Aaron Rodgers to be the number one quarterback in the NFC. You know, because again, I think it's been back and forth between he and Drew Brees. You know, for like 5 and 6. You always, I mean, any quarterback that wins the MVP, I mean, they get the number 4 spot. And then it used to be Ben Roethlisberger was number 3, but I think you put that in question. But now, if Russell Wilson wins, that's going to be his 10th playoff win. Okay, Aaron Rodgers has 9. Okay, Aaron Rodgers has been has won 1 Super Bowl, and Russell's won 1 and been to another. And so now you start to get the argument. It's like, okay, at the age of 31, is he ready to pass Aaron Rodgers? And to go into Lambeau and win a game like that, that to me kind of changes things. Just like in the AFC, we're looking at the best quarterbacks now being guys 25 years or younger. You know, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. And then you also look at Deshaun Watson. I mean, we're seeing such a major changing at the guard at the quarterback position. Could it be that they could end up with the you know, Russell now passing Aaron if he can win this game?
Well, do you think they will win, John?
The Fant thing really puts me in question. I know, you know, talking to a lot of people back when I was at in Canton, you know, with the front office guys and the writers and all that stuff, they're kind of, the odds seem to think, and, you know, most of the people think that Packers could lose because, you know, it's like, for example, now the talk is, they're saying if you have a choice between two quarterbacks that you have to win a game, it was going to be Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. And now more people are starting to say Russell Wilson because, you know, it hasn't happened the last couple of years for Aaron Rodgers, even though he won 13 games this year. And Russell has done such a great job, you know, again, winning with a 4th-string running back, a 4th-string tight end, changes on the offensive line, sometimes no blocking, lack of a running game, all those different things. And he has done that well. And again, the only quarterback that tops him on the MVP voting, the only player that tops him on the MVP voting is Lamar Jackson, who's had just an incredible season. But now we're at that stage, you know, is he ready to pass Aaron Rodgers?
John, let's go to San Francisco. Minnesota is going to play the San Francisco 49ers. I feel like Kirk Cousins is making a turn in his career, and I think he might be able to get it done. What do you feel about that game?
I think it's a chance, yeah. But again, so many things have to happen outside of Kirk Cousins. They have to have a big game out of Dalvin Cook. And they could, because, I mean, you've seen teams are now able to run on the 49ers, you know, because they're so light on the defensive line. And again, great defense. It's a well-rested defense. You know, they not only may get Dee Ford back, but now they may get Kwame Alexander back because they're going to activate him off the injured list. So there's a lot of positive things there. But, you know, in this could be a devastating blow to San Francisco if they lose because, you know, in the back of Kyle Shanahan's mind, what quarterback has always been the one that he wanted for San Francisco? And the answer wasn't Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's not saying what he has in Jimmy Garoppolo now. He's happy. He is happy. But, you know, Kyle worked with Kirk Cousins in Washington. I know he wanted Kirk Cousins in free agency, and Kirk Cousins would have been there. But organizationally, they had the opportunity to get Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick and get him before free agency and then take a look at him, and they didn't have to pay the $30 million or whatever it might have cost them because, you know, what ended up Kirk doing, he took a 3-year deal at $28 million a year just to go to Minnesota, turning down the Jets. But, I mean, Kirk would have gone directly to Kyle Shanahan, and so if all of a sudden Cousins beats Shanahan, he's going to start thinking, gee, I wish it would have gone the other way with Jimmy Garoppolo not being there.
Hey, John, let's just play out the hypothetical. The Seahawks win,
yeah.
So they're waiting. Let's pretend they're waiting for their opponent. Who's the better?
Well, they don't have to wait. They'll know tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I understand that. But just if you were able to choose their opponent, who's the better matchup? Not where they're playing, because I think Dave feels like they've got a better – they match up better with the 49ers than they do the Vikings, although mm-hmm. We saw him beat the 49ers. So yeah. Who's the better matchup for him?
I think that it would be the 49ers because, again, they know so much about them, and there's a better history. Again, they beat Minnesota just about every time they played them. You know, so was a little. I mean, in the preseason, it looked like Minnesota looked like the better team, and that, when Seattle beat them, it looked like Seattle was the better team. But I have to say that, you know, San Francisco, although, again, as far as the big picture, you'd rather play Minnesota because you get to play them at home. And that's much better. That's why losing those two games at the end of the season hurt, because now they have to play on the road, and now they have to play on the road in the frozen tundra where it's supposed to snow tomorrow, be cold and windy and all those different things that can take away from a lot of things. But I have to think that ultimately getting to San Francisco, and plus for somebody that does the sidelines, I'd much rather be in San Francisco than Green Bay. Although, again, in Minnesota, it'll be here in Seattle. I mean, again, yeah. The preference would be here in Seattle. Because, again, no travel, chance to get an extra day of rest, all those different things for the players. But anything can happen. Because the one thing I think when you looked at the final six teams in the playoffs, there really isn't much of a difference between them. I mean, certainly some things look better. 49ers defense looks really good. But, you saw even as good as the 49ers defense was and the fact that Green Bay won 13 games, going into week 16, Seattle had the chance to be the number one seed if they won the last two games. And they almost won the last game. And that would have changed the equation where, New Orleans would have not, they would have gotten the home game. And of course, San Francisco would have to play on the road.
Hey, John, Josh McDaniels, your favorite, what do you call him, Joshy Boy.
Yeah,
so
Joshy Boy.
Is he going to get the Browns job?
If he wants it, yeah. I think it's going to be his to take if he really wants it. And I thought it was kind of interesting that on this trip, he flew down and had his wife with him. And so now you can see it's like all they need to do is come to an agreement and he can do it. But I think that there's a couple things that he may not want to like. Like, for example, having not learned anything from Bill Belichick other than great football knowledge in our meeting, and nobody was going to ask him about Tom Brady, I think they're done with Brady. I think he's going to leave. And Josh may want to push to have maybe Tom come to Cleveland, and that may be not the answer that they want because the owner may still want to have Baker Mayfield as the quarterback. That could be a problem. That could be a problem for Josh to have Paul D. Podesta, the baseball analytics guy, still there in the organization. But, he is from John Carroll University, the college right there. So that's a Cleveland. I mean, he's got Cleveland ties all the way through. And I think that he'll get the ability to kind of pick a general manager. So there's a lot of things there. I mean, my prediction would be unless he doesn't like some things and at least he doesn't get all that he wants, he'll take the job by tomorrow.
John, Matt Rhule is the new coach for the Carolina Panthers. Do you feel that he should stick with Cam Newton or ship him out and try to make this thing his own?
I honestly think that he should try something different, but I think that what he has to gauge, and he's not going to be able to unfortunately do it, is get what the feeling of the players are. And the players still want Cam Newton to be the quarterback. They really don't want change. And even though Cam has lost his last eight games, he's nothing but injury prone, and he can be a little bit of a headache to his teammates, I think maybe it's time to do something different. But, Matt, and think about what Matt said, which of course some of it was weird, when he starts talking about, we are going to go out there and have padded practices and all that. Well, you only have a certain number. I mean, you get 10 padded practices during training camp and you get a limited number during the regular season. Whatever the number is, it's like, we're going to go out there and pound people and do those things. It's like, well, guess what? You're in the National Football League and the union isn't going to allow you to do it unless you want to give up all your OTAs. So I thought that was weird. But with that in mind, if he wants a physical punch you in the mouth type offense, and again, they shouldn't have Cam run as much as he had. I mean, there's no quarterback that wants to punch you in the mouth more than Cam Newton.
John Clayton is our guest, as he is every day at 4 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Michael Bumpus in for Dave today on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hey, just back to the Patriots for a moment. You believe it's a done deal, that they're ready to move on from Brady?
Yeah. No, it's not a done deal. No, I mean, I went up Sunday night, watching the things that were going on, and I had it 60% gone. I'm now up to 80%.
That's because of your elevator ride with the hoodie?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Although it was funny because when he came in, he had nice. Of course, I mean, he was not hoodied, but he was kind of relaxed wardrobe. But I mean, he actually had a bag that had a nice suit and all that stuff, and so he came all dressed up and all that. So I thought that was pretty impressive, because a lot of us, particularly the writers, we didn't get all dressed up. I mean, we put our Hall of Fame free shirts on and went there kind of casual because we knew it was going to be a long period of time. But the reason I think, and here's the rationale, when you see the back and forth that's going on, Bob Kraft comes out and he says, and Bob Kraft does not want Tom Brady to leave the organization ever.
Right.
Okay. He says, well, I tell you, he's like, the two things I wish, he either stays with the 49 or stays here in New England or he retires. Okay, well, guess what? Tom's not retiring. So this week he puts out a tweet talking about the thanks he has for the organization and what it's meant to him and the fans and all those different things. He says, but I still want to play, and we'll see where it takes me. Okay, so what the idea is, Tom is testing them out. Because remember, he's given hometown discounts on the last three deals that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, I don't think he wants to give a hometown discount. I think he probably wants $30 to $33 million. Ben Roethlisberger is younger and making $34 million. And so I think that he won't settle for $25 million. And so I think the organization up and Bill Belichick and that have taken the tact. It's like, okay, this is an age of mobile quarterbacks. He's not mobile. He's 42 going on 43. He's still good. We didn't give him enough good talent. And Tom's probably upset about that because there was nothing there at receiver or tight end that other than Julian Edelman and, of course, James White out of the backfield. So now what's the idea? It's like, okay, should we do this because he's not going to get any more mobile, and this is an age where we need to get a little bit advanced and get mobility in here. And so I think that they probably want to pay him 25. He probably wants 30-plus, and if they're not going to pay him, then he's going to leave.
So who do they get, though? It's not like they've got a young guy who's ready to go mm-hmm. sitting behind him. It would seem like it would behoove them to pay him for a year and draft somebody or acquire somebody to groom behind him for a season. It feels like they're leaving themselves completely empty-handed.
See, I think one of the moves they could make is they could trade for Andy Dalton. And, well, that sounds strange.
Dalton?
Yeah.
That's a better option than Tom Brady?
No, it isn't. But he's more mobile. And I think he wants a bit more mobility.
But Andy Dalton, how old's Andy Dalton?
31.
Now? Yeah, well, but, a 31-year-old Andy Dalton, you'd take that over a 43-year-old Tom Brady, wouldn't you?
No.
Me, no.
No.
No, it's like none of us would.
Well, you guys are all wrong. I would.
You would?
How'd he do for the Bengals this
Tom
year?
Tom Brady's going to be 43 years old.
Yeah, and they won 12 games and made it to the playoffs. What's Andy doing?
How'd he look at the end of the season?
I would still take Tom Brady over Andy Dalton
You guys are wrong about that. You guys are just wrong about that. I mean, no one wins the whole age thing. It's just it catches
I'm talking
up to everybody
for a season.
Hmm?
For a season, I would bring back Tom Brady for a year.
I wouldn't pay him $25 million either. You're paying him for what he's done in the past, not what he's going to do in the future.
Well, then he's not going to stay. Because remember, they redid the deal and gave him the freedom to leave if the numbers aren't right. And the numbers don't look like they're going to be right. Well, so what you do is, Andy Dalton's on a $15 million a year contract. I mean, it could be like a Joe Flacco type trade where it's a third or fourth round pick. You watched in the opening game where Andy is, he's the red rifle, right? He's really not known for his running, but he did RPOs and he moved around and he did all those different things. And so, for half the price of Tom Brady, I mean, you're probably getting half the quarterback of Tom Brady. I think that would be the direction they might consider going. I mean, they could bring in Marcus Mariota. That could be a possibility. He's got some mobility, obviously. But I think the idea is in this age where Bill Belichick is usually a trend or two ahead of everybody else, I think they want somebody with mobility. And again, these are the things I'm starting to hear. I don't think it's right, but that's what I'm starting to hear.
I get the mobile part. Tom Brady's never been mobile, even in his rookie year.
What do you mean? You saw him at the combine.
He was a blur, flash of light.
I mean, he ran slower than Danny O'Neill when Danny O'Neill did the media combine the other day a couple years ago at the Seahawks facility.
And he did it in a suit, no less.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, just the idea that, hey, we'll take half the quarterback who can move around. You won 12 games this year with a guy who's been immobile. You've won Super Bowls with an immobile quarterback. Mm-hmm. So the idea that mobility would be the reason to get rid of Tom and bring in a guy like Dalton, who's you're not going to win more games with Dalton.
No, I mean, in fact, I mean, if they say goodbye to Tom Brady, the time of the 12-win seasons are done.
I agree.
They're done. I mean, even as bad as the talent was there, because, again, the one number that just staggers me. Now, remember, they traded Jacob Hollister to Seattle for a seventh-round pick. Okay, Hollister had 41 picks. The remaining tight ends, the three tight ends in New England, caught 39. That's the total. I'm not talking about one guy catching 39. I mean, Ben Watson and Izzo and, one of the other guys, they only had 39 catches total.
All right, John, the nightcap game tomorrow night, 5:15 on CBS, Tennessee at Baltimore. I know we've already talked about this a little bit, but if you're Mike Vrabel and he comes up to you and he sees you in an elevator or something and says, hey, professor, what's my best game plan going into this explosive game against the Baltimore Ravens? What should I do to win?
I think what you do is you basically say, okay, you know, just have the guys come in for the exit interviews on Monday, and we'll get you out of there by 3 or 4, and you can have a great off season. I think that would probably be the best strategy he could take.
Well, what's Tennessee's defense like? I want to watch a good game tomorrow night, John.
Yeah, good. I mean, I don't know.
My wife's out of town. I'm hanging out with the kids and the dog. I don't want a blowout.
Is there a college game? How about a Pac-12 basketball game?
Oh, yeah, the Cougs will be on tomorrow.
Yeah, you can watch the Cougs. There you go. Yeah, but no, I think what you're looking at is that you know, it was an incredible win by Mike Vrabel, Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, and all that stuff. But now things are different. I mean, they're going again. Bill Belichick couldn't figure out a way to slow down Lamar Jackson, not at any point. And so now what you see is that you know, they go into this one, you know, a good run defense by the Ravens. You know, they've got Brandon Williams and they've got Michael Pierce. They're real good at stuffing the run. They're real good with good pressure in the front seven to contain things because their technique with Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, is great. I mean, to win, you have to have a low-scoring game. And they went to New England, low-scoring game. They had Derrick Henry run for 182 yards. You know, they only had to have 8 completions by Ryan Tannehill. Now things switch. They're not going to get 182 yards. They're going to be lucky to get maybe 80. And so now that puts more on Ryan Tannehill and going against that defense. Not that it's a great defense. It's a good defense. I get the feeling that they'll get a couple turnovers and a couple turnovers. Because, again, they're going to have to force issues to stay with the Ravens. They average 33 points a game.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 9 and then hoping to get to Chicago so I can drive up to Green Bay.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. We'll talk to you next week, John.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. There's the professor, John Clayton, with us every day at 4 o'clock. Coming up, everybody's excited about Mina Kimes. Seahawks super fan, as Maura wrote here.
Mm-hmm.
A super fan. All right. We'll talk to her about this game, get her take on it, see if she thinks Andy Dalton's a better option than Tom Brady.
Okay.
She joins us next year with Bob, David, Moore. Michael Bumpus in with us today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
There it is. Some more Rush for you music fans out there, the passing of the great Neil Peart. A reminder, our insider coverage of the Seahawks playoff run is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Joining us now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, person that everybody is very familiar with out here. She's been deemed a Seahawks super fan. I don't know if she knows that, but she's with us. Mina Kimes is here. Mina, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Ready for this weekend.
Would you say that's accurate, a Seahawks super fan?
You know, I'm just a fan like everyone else, but I think I don't hide it, and there aren't that many of us in the national media, I suppose, so I'll take that.
And I probably should know this, but I don't. What is your connection to the Seahawks? Did you grow up out here? You lived out here for a period of time?
I grew up all over. My dad's from Seattle, though. He was in the Air Force, so I've been going to Seahawks games since I was a kid.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So, hey, we were talking about the perception nationally of Russell Wilson. And where it seems like he was kind of the forgotten guy for a number of years. People didn't seem to know as much as they should have. And now being in that MVP race at the beginning of the year certainly brought up his profile. And he's going off against a guy that many have considered one of the greats in Aaron Rodgers. Do you think he's still considered less than Rodgers? Do you think he's on an equal playing field in terms of the way he's perceived? Or how would you rank those two?
No, I don't. I think he's overtaken him in the national perception. And I can say that with confidence because I've just been on a bunch of our shows today, and we were asked that question. And just about everyone said Seattle's got the better quarterback now, and it's not really debatable. Now, doesn't mean they thought Seattle's going to win this game. But as far as the quarterback goes, I think amongst my peers and sort of the NFL media in general, it feels like Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson are a pretty clear top three.
Hey, Mina, how much of a chance do you give the Seahawks? Do you think it's realistic that they can go into Green Bay and win this game this week?
Yeah, I do, 100%. I think it's because of that elite quarterback. It's also because of the deep passing game, which we certainly saw in Philadelphia with the breakout DK game. I think Seattle has a better group of pass catchers than Green Bay. Now, the offensive line versus Green Bay's defensive line is a very dicey situation, and today's injury report doesn't help. I think probably Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer are solely focused on how to stop Za'Darius Smith with whatever they trot out. But I think Seattle does have a few advantages in this matchup. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, I know, shocker, I'm talking about the Seahawks, this is a weird close game.
Well, what do you think about Marshawn Lynch? How much are you seeing of the old beast mode?
You know, I think it's undeniable. Seattle's run game is not what it was earlier in the season with Chris Carson. But I will say this. Green Bay does not have a very good run defense, and I actually think it's worse than people think because they've played a pretty soft schedule, especially relative to Seattle. You guys know they played one of the hardest schedules in the NFL this year, and they played some pretty bad running backs and still struggled. So I think while the combo of Homer and Lynch isn't elite by any means, I actually think it'll probably be better on Sunday than it's looked than it looked last week.
Hey, man, I saw a video of you during the draft, and you were one of the few people who were really excited that the Seahawks picked up DK Metcalf. Did you expect him to be this good, though?
No, I didn't, especially over the last few weeks, guys. You know, I think probably what people should have expected was that DK would be a nice fit with Wilson, because I think Russell Wilson's the best deep passer in the NFL, and when you have a great deep passer, it's nice to have an incredibly strong, incredibly fast guy who can go get those balls. But I thought his limited route tree was pretty obvious early in the season. You know, he struggled to turn, and I think his lack of agility showed itself sometime. But over the last few weeks, especially against Philadelphia, yes, it was the go routes and the deep passes that were making highlights, but he was also running crossers and slants, and I think it's really impressive how much he's matured as a player.
Mina Kimes is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Mina, the defense obviously is not anywhere near what we watched back in 2012, 13, 14, when they were just dominating points allowed every single year. It's a different version of that defense, certainly, and not as good. Do you put that on the collective talent? Do you put it on Ken Norton as the defensive coordinator? Because, you know, there are a lot of fingers to be pointed out here, and most of them seem to point at Ken Norton. Where are you on that?
Interesting. I think it's a combination of things. I mean, the Seahawks are unique, as you guys know, in that they play a ton of base defense, which is very unusual in the NFL to not have more safeties and cornerbacks out there. But that reflects their personnel, right? And to the best of my knowledge, Ken Norton's not pulling the trigger on signings and draft picks. Now, I do think, and I think this might be a popular opinion up in Seattle, but I'm not so sure you guys would know better than I, that they probably should have gone to some of the rookies earlier. I think Carroll mentioned that, Ugo Mahdi and Blair earlier in the season, because you really can't win in today's NFL with that style of defense. But it seems like they figured it out, and as much as you want to criticize them, I guess, for some of the decisions they've made before the season, the Quandre Diggs trade was clearly a home run.
So Sunday, when this game's being played, Mina, where will you be watching this? And we have a Seahawks jersey on. Are you the type that will yell at your TV and that type of thing?
Yeah, I'm the type that what you saw in that DK clip is pretty much what I look like all game. Lately, I've been wearing a Beast Mode sweatshirt. I pulled that one out of the back of my closet, and you know, hey, it seems to be working. So if something's not broke, I don't fix it. I'll let it go.
Speaking of beast mode, what are realistic expectations for this guy? I think I got him under 50 yards. Jim has him under 60 yards. What are you expecting out of him this weekend?
Well, yeah, I think you're right, but I think that's fine, right? Because they don't need to use him. They don't need him to run for 100 yards. They use him situationally at the goal line. You know, my favorite play in the Philadelphia game wasn't the touchdown. It was on third and short when Schottenheimer had Beast Mode fake, or Wilson faked the handoff, then Beast Mode leaked outside, he tossed it to him on play action, he trundled for about 20 yards. That's what smart coaches do. He uses players in ways defenses aren't ready for. And I think if they can use Beast Mode a few times like that, they'll have great success with him.
Mina, where do you think this coaching job ranks for Pete Carroll, considering what he's had to deal with in the way of young talent and in the way of injuries and the schedule that they faced?
I think, you know, Pete Carroll is one of the best coaches in the NFL. Look, I criticize him as much as anyone for some of the situational decisions, the challenges. You know, at times I felt like leaning a little bit too much on the run game early on. But it's absolutely undeniable that from a leadership and player development standpoint, he is as good as it gets, and I think his record speaks for itself.
All right, Mina, you have a fan in Eagle River, Alaska. Please tell Mina the 907 loves her podcast featuring Lenny, the daily podcast. How much fun are you having doing that?
Oh, man. Well, that's two podcasts. I have a football one called the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, and then we have the daily podcast, ESPN Daily. It's a different sports story every day. Today's is on Coach Ed Orgeron, but sometimes we do NFL, sometimes we do basketball. It's a nice mix.
And Lenny is?
Oh, Lenny's my dog.
Yeah, yeah. That's what kind of dog?
Thank you for asking. He's a mutt, so we're not 100% sure. I did one of those DNA tests twice, and I got wildly different results. So it's unclear, but I'll tell you this. He is a rabid Seahawks fan.
That's a good dog right there. And we are absolute dog mm-hmm. lovers here. So the fact yeah. that you put your dog's name on the podcast says you're a really good person.
So, Mina, I saw that you've had 5 million downloads since October, and I started a podcast called Bark. It's all about dogs, and I've had 12,000. So, I'm hoping that maybe I could get you as a guest sometime on a future season in Bark.
Me, but what about Lenny?
Well, yeah.
You're looking for a dog guest.
Yeah,
been invited on a show, so.
Okay. Well, let's get Lenny. Let's make it happen if you're available for that.
Have your people call his people, okay?
Lenny's got people. I love it. Hey, Mina, thanks so much for taking time with us. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we're all celebrating after this weekend.
Absolutely. Talk to you later, guys.
There you go. There's Mina Kimes of ESPN and owner of Lenny. I like that name. That's a good dog name.
I admit I didn't know that Lenny was a dog. I thought it was some character on Lebatard's show.
Oh, yeah. No, it's her.
Well, Lebatard's dad's on that show, though, right? What's his name?
Poppy.
Oh, Poppy.
That makes sense.
Jim, what's the name of your dog?
River.
River.
Yeah.
You got a dog too, Bob?
Yeah, Frank.
Frank? I got Lulu.
Lulu?
Lulu. Lulu.
What kind of dog?
It's a Labradoodle.
Labradoodle.
Yeah.
So you're a dog lover, too?
I am.
That's awesome. That's we're all great people.
Yeah, River's named after a coug, you know.
Craycraft.
There
you go.
How come you didn't name it Bumpus?
I should have.
Yeah.
Next dog.
Next dog will be named Bumpus.
I'll do it.
There you go.
Three and one in the Apple Cup.
Meanwhile, Bill O'Brien got himself in a little bit of hot water after a video of him berating a fan surfaced this week. We watched that earlier. That was entertaining. That's coming up in Sweep the Dial with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
I was made aware of a video that's out there, and at halftime of the Denver game, coming off the field, I used inappropriate language, and I just want to apologize for that.
What's it like when you see that video and that appears and you're forced to address it during a playoff?
Yeah, no, I apologize for it. You know, like I said, inappropriate comments. And, you know, like I said, I apologize for it. And sorry that it happened.
See, I thought you were going to try to play the audio of his interaction with that fan. And I'm thinking it was just going to be a steady stream of beeps.
Yeah, that wouldn't be worth it.
Because it was video and audio of him walking into the tunnel after a game. And they got beat by the Broncos, right? That's who it was against, and somebody's yelling, "You stink," or "You suck," whatever, and then he started firing back at the fan and used some colorful language while doing it, and got pretty heated.
That's too bad that he felt like he needed to apologize for that.
I mean, I get it. You represent the organization. You're the head guy. You're the coach. You're the face, so to speak. So I get that you expect better from them, but at the same time, I think we tend to forget people are human beings,
yeah,
and that you should all be robots. As an athlete out there, a fan should be able to say whatever they want to you, and you should just have no response and not have an impact. It's just, I don't think you're being realistic to have that expectation. I'm not saying he was right,
yeah,
but I understand his reaction in the heat of the moment. You just lost. You're walking off the field, and you've got some schmageggy up in the stands telling you how much you stink and cursing at you. Yeah, he made a mistake, but
it's not like he does it every week. You know, he made a mistake. He's a human being. He got emotional. Football, people forget to realize football might be one of the most emotional sports out there. Like, if you don't wear your emotions on your sleeve, if you don't go out there and give it everything you have, if you're not physically and mentally exhausted by the end of the game, you don't have a chance of being successful at all. So, no, he shouldn't have done it. But stand up if you've never lost your cool before, guys.
Yeah, and I just...
Does that make you like him more? Because Bill O'Brien...
A little bit, because he fired back. I have a problem with fans who will say things in a crowd, right? It's the mob mentality. I'm in a crowd. I'm in a safe distance. They can't get to me. So I'm going to say something I'd never say to your face alone on the street.
Yeah.
I hate that. Yeah. I cannot stand. That's cowardice. I hate it.
We played USC, and I was committed to USC before I went to Washington State. And I'm at the Coliseum, and this fan is MFing me, talking about my mom, her name, her birthday. Like, they do their research. They know what they're doing. They go out there with a plan. And it's like a double standard. They're allowed to say and do whatever. But don't you dare respond. Don't you dare be a human being and slip up every now and then. So if you're going to call out O'Brien, you got to call out that fan just the same.
No. But guess what? KO, how many biscuits?
This guy got 6 biscuits for 20 people.
Matisse.
Nobody asked. Nobody even asked for
No. But guess what? Where's the Popeye's fries at? Huh? So you only gonna get Chick-fil-A fries, huh?
The man got 6 biscuits for 20 people. Anybody
want to bite? That's Matisse Thybulle getting a hard time from his teammates. Apparently, he messed up. He was getting the rookie treatment. He messed up the food order. 6 biscuits for 20 people or whatever, and fries were an issue.
They made him go to Chick-fil-A and Popeyes, and he didn't get the right ratio of things they wanted from each.
All I can say is he got off easier than the rookies on the Seahawks team that we heard about with the bill that they got stuck with, but... Did you get hazed as a rookie? Did you have to buy food for people or carry luggage or do any of that?
I wasn't making enough money for them to haze me like that. They looked at me and they said, you're not in the right tax bracket. We'll go to this first rounder.
I like these kind of stories, though, especially Matisse Thybulle. We talked to him last year. He's such a great kid.
He was a great player out here, man.
Yeah, and he's playing well there for the Sixers, 17 minutes a game, and he's shooting 45% from three. So nice. One of the things he's really worked on and
wizard.
Coming through with it.
Russell Westbrook making his return to Oklahoma, getting what Jim calls a hero's welcome.
Yeah, I saw it last night on ESPN, and boy, everybody was excited, even though he came back with the Rockets. And, I guess, you know, everybody loved him there. So, yeah, they were excited to see him.
Did you see
have never been a Westbrook fan because he just seems like he's more about me than he is the team, but
yeah,
he's a hell of a player.
There's no debating his ability, that's for sure. But did you see the back and forth on Twitter between Kendrick Perkins and,
yes.
and KD?
Yes, loved it.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's kind of centered around Russell, right?
Yeah.
Perkins was basically saying Westbrook was the best to ever wear a Oklahoma uniform.
Yeah.
And then
KD hopped in and... talked about.
He wasn't. Durant was, wasn't he?
I would say he was, yeah.
So, Perkins' argument was Russell is the best to put on a Thunder's jersey because he ranks like number one in a bunch of categories, but KD is the better player. So Russell's a better Thunder, but KD's a better player.
Well, okay. I don't know. I just think Kevin Durant, the way he goes about his business, he handles himself better body language-wise anyway than Russell Westbrook, but I don't... Would you have given him a hero's welcome coming back to Seattle if he'd played here?
I don't know how the fan base felt when he left. It was good. Obviously, it wasn't good riddance. They were happy to see him back. But, yeah, you should check out the back and forth with Perkins. Perkins was getting into it with Mark D'Amico. I'm not exactly sure who that is. They were going back and forth. And then Perkins says, KD lost in the second round without Russ when I was there. So what does that mean? And then that's when Durant popped in and said, yeah, our starting center, Perkins, averaged a whopping 2 and 3 during that series. You played hard, though, champ, LOL.
It's a pretty good comeback.
Oh, and it went on and on. So it was a good back and forth, and I'm on Durant's side. I'll always be on Durant's side because he's continued to rep Seattle. He's continued to carry the flag. He wears Sonics gear. He talks about the travesty of a team not being here. He's not forgotten that he was here and being at that preseason game that they played out here against the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me chills when he came out
in really
Kemp
cool.
jersey
yeah.
and that building erupted. So
I can still remember, too, the last draft the Sonics had when they took Russell Westbrook. And
yeah.
I remember looking at his stats at UCLA and I thought, okay, well, he looks like he's good, not great. But it's funny how some of these guys, when you look at their stats in college, Zach LaVine from Bothell
yeah.
and what he's gone on to be. And James Harden, I remember him at ASU, but I don't remember thinking, man, he's going to be a superstar someday.
I think it's a different game. There's a system in college. You got to run the offense, run the offense. NBA is one-on-one. You know, who's the better ball handler? So I think they're allowed to express themselves a little more when they get to the NBA.
All right, there you go. A couple of big stories for you. Meanwhile, we're going to open up the phone lines for you, Seahawks fans. You get a chance to fill in the blank. Seahawks win if. They make it to the championship game if. We need you to fill in the blank. 421-3776, toll free 866-979-3776. We'll come back with your phone calls next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore with Michael Bumpus in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.